The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And we'd like to welcome you to another edition of Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio. Catch us out on the web at linewsradio.com. I'm your host, Bob Vecchio, thanking you for tuning in each and every week to hear the amazing stories of the things that our kids are accomplishing in schools across Long Island. This week, our spotlight is a superintendent's roundtable. We're in the middle of budget season, legislative advocacy season, and there's a lot of information that's going on up in Albany that you need to know that's going to impact your schools, your property taxes, and your communities overall. So we're pleased to be once again joined by the superintendent of Hampton Bays, Lars Clemmensen. Welcome back to Spotlight on Long Island Schools.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
And we have the superintendent from the Remsenburg-Spionk School District, Ron Becerra. Welcome back, Ron.
Be here. Thanks.
And Dr. Julie Lutz, she's the Chief Operating Officer for East and Suffolk BOCES, and we've done several programs about some of the great innovative programming that East and Suffolk BOCES provides our kids on the eastern side of Suffolk out here. Dr. Julie Lutz, welcome back to Spotlight on Long Island Schools. So let's get right into it, right? We're in the middle of the budget season, and fairly recently in the news, Governor Cuomo announced that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, out of the blue, there's suddenly this huge $2.3, $2.5 billion, what's a couple billion amongst friends? But all of a sudden, there's this huge deficit over the last 2 months that nobody anticipated. Lars, as a school board president and, of course, as school board officials, anytime the governor sends out a message like that, that, you know, oh, guess what? We don't have as much money as we thought. I already sent you my budget with the proposed increase I had for school districts, and school officials will debate about it wasn't enough to begin with. What type of shockwaves is that sending through the system right now?
I think there's concern. We look at our January school aid runs and we look at that initial proposed budget and say, okay, that's a starting point. And if the starting point is going to go down when we've always expected it, and as it's turned out, to go up by the time the enacted budget is signed in April, then it increases the stakes for us to be sending our message loud and clear to Albany, to our elected officials in the Long Island delegation, that state aid to Long Island is important for a lot of reasons, for the needs and the costs that our kids have, and for the property tax relief that our neighbors need.
Right. And Dr. Lutz, you know, state aid to Long Island is, you hear a lot this time of year about Long Island's fair share. And, you know, upstate New York is clamoring for their aid that they need for their schools. And of course, now with the shift in the governance system and structure in Albany, people are worried about the centric power that New York City will hold over the rest of the state and what will that mean in fighting for shares. But there's been a shift in the demographics on Long Island that a lot of people outside of Long Island are probably not aware of. Everybody probably thinks the Hamptons and probably thinks Gold Coast, Nassau County. But Long Island has had a significant shift over the last decade that really we are more dependent on the resources from the state to support the services and needs for the schools. So talk to us a little bit about some of those shifts.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are numbers that we've been tracking for a while. When we take a look at student wealth or family wealth, which we measure, it's not a perfect measurement. We measure through free and reduced price lunch numbers. In the last 10 years, we've seen a 98% increase in free and reduced price lunch numbers in Suffolk County. When we take a look at even district wealth, which is a combination of, you know, land wealth and income in the district, and we've seen shifts in district wealth over those years, with more districts in Suffolk County falling below the state average in wealth. And, you know, you take a look at that and then you take a look at the shifting demographics. In addition to the, you know, the increased poverty, we've seen incredible upward trends in the number of English language learners on Long Island. If you take a look at school districts across New York State with an enrollment of 20% or more English language learners, all but, I think, 20 or 17 out of the 22 of them are from Long Island. And I think you're right. When people think about Long Island, they don't think of those kinds of numbers and those kinds of shifts. But it's real. And, you know, those. So in addition to the challenges we've had historically, where we don't get our fair share, where we, you know, we have more students than we get state aid. Now we have students with increasing needs. And it's a message we've been sending for the last couple of years. I think people in Albany are finally hearing it. Whether or not they respond to it, I think is yet to be seen.
And Ron, you know, with the shifting demographics, and one of the issues, and I'm not saying that the deficit is not real. I'm sure it is real. I question the surprise about the deficit. But there has been an exodus out of New York State, which, you know, in my school district at William Floyd, when I look at my population 10 years ago compared to now, I'm down about 1,000 students compared to the enrollment 10 years ago. But like Dr. Lutz just said, my free and reduced lunch is almost double. My ELL population has gone up several hundred students. So we have less kids, but higher needs. On a small scale with a smaller school district, it doesn't really take a lot of enrollment shifts in your school to really impact you budget-wise. So when we're talking about fighting for shares or fighting for changes in mandate relief, from a small school system standpoint, what does that mean to you, particularly with not only enrollment shifts, but these demographic shifts?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we're seeing across all districts is this declining enrollment, or most districts, I should say. And we're certainly seeing that in our district as well. You know, interestingly, in a district like mine, it's a K-6 district. In the short run, it actually sometimes can help us because we have less tuition kids in the high schools. However, once that we hit a bubble, we end up running into a real deficit when we have a large group of kids that we have to tuition into our secondary school kids, high schools, I should say. And that presents a tremendous problem for us because, you know, with a 2% tax cap and with all of these issues that exist, we find ourselves in a tremendous bind. And that's where we were about 5 years ago when we needed to pierce a cap because we had one of those tuition bubbles that really cost us on the expense side of our budget. And we were unable to do it without trying to pierce a cap.
You know, and speaking of the cap, that's a huge point for advocacy this year from a legislative standpoint. The tax cap has been in place now for several years, and school districts are kind of maneuvering around some of the nuances. And we've actually seen some of the unintended consequences of the tax cap. A citizen referendum, meaning citizens in the Port Patrick Medford School District wanted to expand busing. So they put on the ballot through a petition process, which doesn't take a lot of signatures to get something on the ballot, where the Board of Education actually presented a budget within the tax cap. But because of this proposal that the citizens put forward, it put it over the tax cap. So there's a lot of argument, well, now they need a supermajority for everything, even though the Board of Education kept their budget within the cap. So modifications to the tax cap. We also saw in Islip School District that they had a negative number on their tax cap, and they actually would have benefited by having the budget voted down to get to zero. You know, I don't think these were the original intentions, Lars, of the tax cap. And there's talk about making it permanent. So what are some of the points that we're trying to make? If they're going to make it permanent, there's some changes that are needed.
I think so. The ISLIP example and the PatMed example are two great ones that you should not have to be digging out to maintain, especially with what we just talked about, that rising costs and rising needs. And I think that if we end the legislative session and we have a permanent tax cap, that prudent modifications are necessary for that, not to erode the tax cap in any way. Because you're right, I think by and large, schools are still turning on their lights and offering great opportunities for kids. The Long Island outcomes in public schools still put us right at the top of some of the best outcomes in public education. And boards of ed and leadership teams are doing a great job leading us through the tax cap era. But there are those realities that exist. Don't go lower than zero.
Right.
Keep 2%, 2%, so that it doesn't go from 0.12 one year to 2.4 the next year. Gives boards and leadership teams opportunities to do some long-term sustainable fiscal planning. New mandates, new government mandates. If we're not going to change the rules, we want to fund the rules. We want to make sure that if there's something that is seen as important statewide for school districts to be doing, that there's money for that so that our property taxpayers and school districts aren't in a position to say, okay, well, we have this new thing that we have to do. We're going to get rid of the thing that our community has valued and wants to do.
Right. And Dr. Lutz, I mean, the thing that I love going to presentations that you're at, you present a lot of data. And some of the data shows just what a high quality education Long Island is delivering as a whole. What are some of the other things that the data points are showing you from a return on investment standpoint?
Yeah, you know, I think the big one and is that Long Island has 16 to 17% of the students. And for many years now, we've gotten 12% of the state aid. But I think more importantly, when you take a look at what Long Island taxpayers are, putting out of their own pockets to pay for schools, as opposed to what that looks like in the rest of the state, there's some significant differences. You know, total receipts from the state on Long Island to fund schools is 31.5%. You take a look at the rest of the state, it's 48.7%.
So we're not getting our share, and that's the argument that the governor's using with the president with the SALT deductions. But we'll get into that a little bit after the break. We're going to talk about social-emotional needs and school safety and more about this legislative season when we come back to Spotlight on Long Island Schools on 103.9 LI News Radio.